think that's what I struggled with the most, is when I signed up for this, I felt like, and I think because it's like, okay, you need to make this lifestyle change and you need to make it forever. How can I stick to a diet? And that's not the right term, but this is what I felt like at the time. How can I stick to a diet forever when I failed at dieting for the last 8 years? And it's terrifying, but it didn't take me that long starting the protocol before I realized that this was way easier. Like, this is so much easier than anything I was doing before. I think about food, like, it has no control over me now, which seems crazy because I'm sticking to this lifestyle change. And, you know, I'm talking to my friends, oh, what kind of foods are you eating? And they, you know, it seems so extreme, but it's information I know, it's in the back of my mind. Once you know something, you know it, it's there. And it's easy. Whereas before, I was controlling my life. All I was thinking about was food.
Mm-hmm.
What can I eat? What shouldn't I eat? You know, if I went out for dinner with friends, I never enjoyed my meal because I felt guilty.
Mm-hmm.
And now I enjoy food way more than I ever did, and I'm losing weight doing it.
Hi, I'm Claire Goodwin, and this is the PCOS Nutritionist Podcast. I have PCOS too, and I know how hard it can be to get the help you need. So I bring together my expertise as a registered nutritionist and exercise scientist, together with other experts I trust and people with real life lived experience of PCOS, to help you get the information you need to make a real difference to your symptoms.
Imagine going to the doctor about an ear infection and being told that you need to lose weight. Well, I actually probably don't think that you need to imagine it. Many of you will have gone through the same thing. Whether it's an ear infection or other completely unrelated symptom, many of us have been there, and that's totally understandable. I know that many doctors are being told that that's what they need to counsel their patients about, but when you then say, actually, yeah, this is a goal for me, I would like this, if that is a goal for you, and then not being offered anything or being put in a group that is really condescending, basically telling you not to eat chicken nuggets every night. Now, this is Jamie's story. Something that she really struggled with was an ongoing battle with her weight not really matching with her lifestyle, trying everything, many, many diets over the years, including really severe calorie restriction, like 500 calorie diets, and finding that sometimes they worked, but it always meant that she'd put on more weight afterwards and feel like an absolute failure. So I've asked Jamie to come and talk about this because she's now in a completely different space. She has never had the relationship with food that she does now, and can offer that hindsight to you of what it feels like, maybe some of the, now looking back, what were some of the mistakes that she was making, and what really made a change, what really made the difference to her to now be in the position where she never has to think about food. She never has to think about her weight. She never has to think about other PCOS symptoms that she didn't know were related, like brain fog. And although it can be really hard if you're listening to this and are in the position of where Jamie was a few years ago, just try and take away from this the understanding that it can be better and it might take another try. But you are not a failure, and you are not, it's not your lack of willpower or anything else that's meant that the other things that you've tried have been unsuccessful. Generally, it's because you've been set up for failure. And when we really understand what's causing this in your body, we can really set you up with some really specific changes that can make a huge difference to how you feel. Now, we talk quite a bit about weight in this episode, which can be triggering for some people. But instead of just saying, don't listen to this, you might be triggered, I instead really implore you to listen to it. But what I want you to hear is that weight is a symptom of what is going on in Jamie's body in this instance. It's a symptom of those underlying drivers. And when we get those right, actually how neutral weight can become. Weight is triggering for many of us because of what's happened to us in the past. And you will listen to the same thing that Jamie says, exactly what I said in that intro, that weight, we might go to the doctor and they want to talk about it, or we might feel like a failure because of diets we've tried and not found success in. And that's what leads us to have these connotations around thinking about weight. But if you can see that there is no like blame here, or no, even when Jamie talks about this, yes, she's had weight loss, but she says, I don't want to talk to you about a number, because I know that I would have listened to this in the past and been like literally there with my pen and paper thinking, okay, what did she lose and how am I going to get there? Instead, she now sees that the weight was merely a symptom of what was going on for her, and that it has resolved quite easily, and therefore allowed her now to have a relationship with her body that she could never have had before, because the weight can be so much more neutral than all of the associated guilt and shame that it has previously had. So try that. Just try listening to this and not thinking about weight in a way that means anything about you, your success or failure, but instead of weight being a symptom of what's going on in your body at the moment, or potentially in the past. Okay, Jamie, so can you start by telling us where you think that your PCOS journey started?
Yep. Okay, so I always struggled with my weight, but like in my teen years, you do anyway, right? Mm. Looking back, I wasn't that overweight. I was always just like a little bit bigger than my peers. When I finished high school, I went into Camp America. And I think that's really like where I might have triggered my PCOS, because my diet changed a lot. I was eating more processed foods. I didn't really used to eat breakfast, and then I was eating like the breakfast in the whole camp. I was eating French toast, pancakes, whatever we had, like every day of the week. And it was usually high carbs, high sugar. So I definitely think that's what triggered it. So I started to put on weight. Obviously, I think, definitely the weight was the first obvious sign, but the other ones were a lot more subtle, right?
Like, and was that weight quite rapid at Camp America?
So the first year it wasn't. But the second year I was in the office more. The first year I was quite active. I was out, I was half photography. After, I was walking around all day, every day. So I probably was, counteracting that. But the second year and the third year especially, I packed on the weight. Like, I think my mum was a bit shocked when I got home. I was in the office my third year. And so I wasn't as active. Eating the same kind of diet. That's where I put on a lot of the weight. And then, I got home and I didn't, like, I knew, I started to think, like, oh, there's something going on here. And I'd need to go to the doctor for things, other health concerns, right? And every time I'd go to the doctor, it would be, okay, we'll talk about that for a minute, but you're overweight and you need to lose weight. And then I started to not want to go to the doctor. And then also I started to, okay, I need to lose weight. What do I do? Like, can you help me? Blah, blah, blah. I was traveling around Europe. I got sick. I went to the doctor. I had to do blood tests for something else. And then they said, oh, like, your testosterone's high. How are your periods? Irregular? Do you have excess hair? You're obviously overweight. I think you have this thing, PCOS. But that was it, It wasn't like, okay, cool, what's that? And it's so weird that it's called polycystic ovarian syndrome, because I go, okay, I'm going to struggle to have kids, and also I need to lose weight. That's kind of all the doctor told me, and then she sent me on my way.
Yeah, you're right. For such a significant chronic condition that has so many implications on our life, it is often brushed over so much and by the doctors when they're like, oh, it's okay, it's just this, or go and look it up.
And you kind of leave feeling like it's not even that important, this thing they've told you, because they didn't really, like, she just said, oh, I think you've got polycystic ovarian syndrome. And like I said to you before, like, they don't even give you a pamphlet or anything. Like, it's funny, but it's not.
It's like, at the very least, right? I mean, like, the pamphlets are like next to useless, but
it's still, it's like, something. Yeah. And you just hear, ovarian syndrome? Like, what is that? And so I don't even think I really looked into it that much. Like I said, oh, I might have this. And then I just carried on with my life. I carried on trying to lose weight on my own, doing different diets. And it started out like, yeah, I'd put on weight at camp. I was bigger than I had been, but so I tried to do a diet and to lose the weight, and that didn't work. And then I put on weight, and then you start to get more and more desperate because you're trying to lose weight. It's not working. So you do something more desperate. You do a more intense diet. You eat less. Maybe you do lose some weight. I did. And then I put it on plus more. And it seems so obvious now because everything I was doing was so counterproductive to what we've worked through. But at the time, you're just desperate and there's no help. I felt like that. I know a lot of people do.
I felt like that too. And it is that desperation because you're like, well, gosh, I've tried this.
Yeah.
And it's not like I'm not trying, you know, like all of the visions we get portrayed about people that gain weight is that they are eating
too much
terrible food, or you know, that they're eating like McDonald's and they're not moving, and you're like, but I am.
Yeah.
Like, or you might hear someone who says who's had a great weight loss story, and they say, oh, I just cut out the crap. Like, I just stopped eating.
Yeah, I stopped drinking sugary drinks.
Yeah, and you're like, but I didn't drink them to start with. So
yeah, that's literally me, because I've never liked, juice or fizzy or anything. And so that would happen to me a lot. People would stop drinking, you know, and I'm like, oh, I can't cut the thing out that I don't have.
Yeah, or why have I ended up like this when I didn't drink that in the start? So how is this working? And that's, I think, that's where the desperation comes from, because you're like, well, if nothing else I've heard from, whether that's in like magazines or media or social media or whatever, that works, then I'm going to have to try something more.
And if you talk to people that have lost weight, like obviously there's people out there that don't have this condition and they can lose weight, and they do. You know, they might have been eating too much or whatever. Like, there's multiple reasons, but they can easily get the weight back off. And you go, oh, what did you do? And then you try it and you can't. And then you go, what have they got I don't have? Like, how come I'm failing at this and they're not? Because, you know, I did a lot. I did a lot of diets. I got more and more desperate. And I'd do something, you know, I did the HCG diet. I think it's like 500 calories. It's just insane. And that worked. I lost weight. Well, it, you know, worked. But, you know, I think I dropped like 20 kgs. And then I came off the diet, because you can't live on a 500 calorie diet forever. And you put the weight on, and now you're a failure because you've put the weight on, because you can't eat 500 calories a day. Like, who can do that?
Yeah, it's impossible. But no one helps you with the, like, okay, what do we do now? Like, that's, And this is what research shows us, is that people that when you lose weight, especially if it's on a really low-calorie diet like the HCG, you do put on more because your body is, like, compensating. It's like the rubber band effect. If you pull it back, then, it pings back, and it pings back further than what it was to start with. And that is just the way your hypothalamus and your brain works. That's got, like, a fat thermostat. And this is why so many people really struggle with both, like, they might not struggle losing weight, but they might struggle gaining it really back really quickly, and then gaining more than that what they did before.
Yeah, that's exactly my experience. Like, I would lose 10 kgs, I'd put 15 on. Then I'd try another diet, I'd lose 20, I'd put 30 on. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was, and then, you know, I did HCG, I did keto. I did these ridiculous diets, but I also did really good diets that would have worked for someone that didn't have PCOS. You know, I worked with a PT, and, you know, she worked out my maintenance, and it's, you know, it was similar to what I was eating this time with you, like the amount of food, but it just wasn't the right food for me. And that was from she was a nutritionist and personal trainer. And it was like, oats for breakfast, which, you know, that's good, great for some people. It's terrible for me. And it's frustrating, because I was actually sticking to these things, you know, like I still was failing, and I, you know, you feel like you're doing it wrong, even though you're actually following the steps that someone's given you. So I also did reasonable diets. My partner at the time was really into health and fitness, and, you know, he made me a meal plan and an exercise routine, weights as well, but it was just not the right food for me. Mm. You know, and he had me eating like a reasonable about, he taught me how to count calories and, you know, all of that. And so I did that as well. I was doing these like insane diets, but then that wouldn't work. So I'd have to do something more extreme. Mm. And he'd say to me, like, you're going to ruin your metabolism, you know, like this isn't healthy. It doesn't work. And you know, it doesn't. But you're just so desperate. Like, there's no other answer. So what are you going to do?
And you probably get that positive feedback. Well, I know you get the positive feedback because then the more extreme thing does work.
Yes.
And you're like, well, it. And then it reinforces in your brain. It's like, well, I've got to do something harder or more mm-hmm. extreme to
I
get.
I just got to do it a bit. Like, yeah, that worked. I just got to do a little bit more.
Mm, mm. And when you like when the weight comes back on, it's like, okay, well, I just have to do it again. And but that's the hard thing too, is because often most of the time, the second time around, it doesn't work.
Yes.
And
this slowly it gets less and less effective. Yeah. I did it multiple times.
Yeah. Like. And this is an interesting thing. I think there's something to do. I talked about this on another podcast, but I think there's something about the novelty value of a lot of these things to your body, is that when it's like novel and new, it responds much more than when you try it. Because I hear this all the time. People say to me, I did keto, it worked the first time, but I couldn't sustain it. And so I kind of ended up eating more carbohydrates, and then the weight came back on, and then I did it again a second time and it just didn't work, or it didn't work as well. And there's something there that I think that we don't yet understand about the novelty factor of like changing what we're eating.
Yeah.
But yeah, your experience is so common for so many people with that. Mm-hmm. It's not, it's like, okay, the only reason, or a lot of the reason I've done these is because I've already like done the eating in moderation that, you know, dietitians tell me to do, or I've done the like, you know, exercise and workout and nutrition plans that my PT has given me, and it didn't work. And I felt like more of a failure because I then had to, the person made me feel like a failure because they were giving it to me and going, well, it should work because it's like works for all these other people, or it, you know, it fits, you know, your macros or metabolism or exactly. And yeah. And so then you're just left feeling like more and more, and it's that reinforcing that you're a failure. You've got no self-control.
Like I got to the point where I just wouldn't tell people I was on a diet. Like I wouldn't want to go out to eat and be like, oh no, I can't. Cause I wouldn't want people like, oh, you're trying to diet. And then when I can't, I don't succeed. They're like, oh, she's tried, but she hasn't. Do you know what I mean? Mm. Like, I mean, I think it probably affected me more than it affected a lot of people. And I don't think I realized at the time how much it was like other symptoms of PCOS. I think I tied all of my issues to the weight.
Mm.
And, you know, I worked with you for a while and I fixed a lot of the other issues before I actually lost any weight.
Yeah.
And I felt way better, even though I was the same size as when I went to you.
Yeah.
I just didn't realize that like before I had addressed those symptoms.
What were the other things? Because I remember you talking about brain fog.
Was like a big one. Yeah. And it was like it was really an identity issue for me because I didn't feel like myself anymore. You know, I would always been passionate about my job. I'd always been good at my job. I struggled. Like I was struggling. I felt stupid. Like, you know, couldn't focus. I was, you know, like, you know, I just couldn't concentrate. And I'm like, man, I'm like good at my job. Like what's going on? Like I've always been into sport. You know, I was tired. I was also overweight, so it was harder. And so, like, it was kind of like everything I loved and, like, everything that was me, I couldn't do anymore or as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I really struggled with that a lot. And, yeah, I think that's probably where the desperation came in as well, because I just got to the point where I was, like, I kind of, like, put my life on hold and I was, like, okay, I've got to just lose weight and then I can enjoy my life again.
Mm-hmm.
But until then, this is it kind of thing, you know, like.
Mm. But actually, and a lot of that was because you were being told every time you went to the doctor, they were saying,
mm-hmm.
this is the problem. Okay. Oh yeah. Oh, so you're like, you're bleeding 5 liters a day. Oh, okay. That's interesting. But you need to lose weight. Yeah. Like seriously, there's some of
that. I went in like, you know, with like a ear infection and they go, okay, but you need to lose weight. You know, and it's like I should be able to not be worried about going to the doctors to sort my ear infection out, you know, like without being told to lose weight. And they also are like, hey, you know, you've got PCOS, so you need to lose weight because that's going to help address your symptoms and it's way harder to lose weight. Goodbye.
And you're like, cool. Thanks for the pep talk.
It's just like it's – you laugh, but it's not funny. It's not.
We laugh because we're –
Like, you have to laugh. But, yeah, it's when you think about it, it's just crazy.
It is ridiculous. And so you were being told, you know, because every time it was being reinforced to you when you went to the doctor that you had to lose weight. So, of course, you think that, okay, well, if I lose weight, all these other symptoms. But that's not what happened, right? Like, actually, the symptoms resolved before the
weight loss. Yeah, 100%. Like, and we talked about it because when I went to you, you know, like I said, I kind of tied everything to the weight. That was what my issue was. And that was going to fix everything if I was smaller. And I went to you. That was all I wanted, was just to lose weight. And, you know, you get us to do, like, what's your why? And mine's I want to lose weight. And that's not very deep, is it? It's hard to stick to something when it's, like, so shallow. I think we talked about that quite a bit at the time, so I had to really, like, knuckle down.
Yeah, or it's not necessarily that it's shallow, but it's more the fact that often it's out of your control.
Yeah.
Right? Like what your body does, how it burns body fat is out of your control. You can control, sometimes you can control what you eat and how you move.
Yeah.
And like sometimes you can control how much sleep you get. There's things you can do, but you can't actually then go, okay, body, you're now going to like burn more fat, or you don't have any control over that. So it's one of those things that I think if we have a goal that is outside of our control, or where it's so like, and Sophia, our psychologist, talks about this quite a lot, where she says as well that if it is something that is very much like a, instead of being like, okay, I want to more embody the actions that this person, the person that I think is kind of like what I want to be, mm-hmm. what they do, the kind of the actions that they do, mm-hmm. that is the thing that's going to keep you motivated and keep you going with that, as mm-hmm. opposed to, okay, I want to lose weight. So after the first week, if I don't lose weight, oh, well, this is pointless. I'm not going to do it anymore. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the thing that we struggle with is when it's a goal that we have no control over, then how do we then know whether we're succeeding? But actually, if we then go, okay, well, I actually want to, as Sophia says, maybe become, this is the kind of the person I want to become. And then everything I do, I can make gradual forward steps towards that. And I have, that's kind of like my compass, what I'm aiming for. And I know that sometimes there'll be a little detour, or maybe the journey there won't be exactly linear. But if I am consistently heading in that direction, I will get to that direction at some point.
Yeah.
But when it comes to weight, sometimes when you've had all of this perceived failure, like when everything's telling you it doesn't work, then you go, okay, but I sort of need, like to get to that person, I must need the right plan, like, which you kind of do, right? Yes. Like you do, you need that guidance to help get there. So it's a bit of both. You need the, okay, give me the techniques and like help me figure out why this hasn't worked in the past and what's going to work for me. But then I can then control those, the habit changes or the actual actions that I take in order to get there.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably why we talked about it a lot, because I was like, if we're really focused on like weight being the only marker of success, that might not happen for many weeks and you could give up.
Yeah, it's such a slow marker, and it's hard to see it. You really have to look back. Or, you know, step back and see a weight. You know, you can see it from distance, looking over like a span of a longer amount of time.
Yeah.
But if you're going week to week, you know, healthy weight loss is supposed to be slow.
Mm.
And so if you're using that as your marker.
It might not be even any at the start, right?
Yeah, well, like,
I think
I would,
the scale didn't change for you.
No, see, and I don't like, I think if I was listening to this podcast, I'd be like, oh my God. Because I didn't lose weight for a year. I think it was about a year that we worked together before I even looked at trying to lose weight, because I wasn't ready to. And I don't like saying that on the podcast, because I think if I was listening to it, I'd be like, oh, like, no, I don't want to wait a year before I can start that journey. But it's funny now, because like I got diagnosed with PCOS when I was 19 and I'm 30 now. So I spent like 8 years trying to lose weight. What's a year in comparison, you know? Yeah, I lost 20 kgs in like 6 weeks or whatever, and then I put it back. Like, you think it's quick, but it's actually way slower because it doesn't work.
Yeah. Yeah, you're actually worse off. Whereas if we think about this in terms of, okay, what is that person I want to be in a year or two's time and start to work towards that, then, because, I mean, you have lost an incredible amount of weight and improved other symptoms along the way and kind of changed a huge amount. But, and so now for you, it's easy to look back and go, oh, I can easily see that journey and how, like, actually linear it kind of was. Yes. But in the moment, it doesn't feel like that sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes it felt hard. But I think that when I went to you, I was so desperate. I also didn't have any other options. Mm-hmm. I think if there were other options that seemed easier, I might have gone down that route because, you know, it's hard. But I didn't, like, I was desperate. Yeah. And I think I'm glad I was in that place in my life, else I might have not have figured it out. But we worked together for a year before I even tried to lose weight, just because I had done a lot of damage doing those diets to my metabolism. You know, I'd slowed it down. I've always been I'd had a bit of muscle on me, and I lost a lot of that, you know, cause you don't just lose fat when you do these diets. It's funny though, because I felt so much better. Mm-hmm. I was the exact same size and I felt way better, which, you know, it's funny because I always thought I'd feel better once I lost the weight, but I felt way better before I lost any weight.
Yeah.
Because all those other, you just don't realize though. And I didn't realize how fatigued I was, because they creep up on you, those symptoms. They're so slow that you don't realize. It's not, I can look back now because, you know, 2 years ago, that's where I was in my life, and that's not that long ago, and I remember what it felt like. But when it's happening so slowly, you just don't notice.
Yeah. The difference between that and like the 8 years from when you were 19 and then going, you know, mm-hmm. Oh, wow, is this how it feels now? And as you said, that just the like memory, short-term memory loss, the brain fog where you just can't quite actually function properly at work, the
sugar cravings. I've never been like a sweet tooth, and I would be like ravenous in the afternoon, like want to eat things I don't even like the taste of because I need sugar, you know, else I'm going to fall asleep. I couldn't go to the supermarket on the way home, you know, because I would just buy like the randomest stuff that I don't even enjoy, you know, because I just, your body's just driving you.
Yeah, it's like the, I always say one of my moments was when I was like rifling through my mum's cupboard at home because I knew she would have some like baking chocolate buttons in there. The worst chocolate.
Like, yeah.
Like, it's pretty much like plastic. Like, kind of where you're like, oh, this is desperate. And they weren't even like the good ones.
And
like
you just do it.
Yeah.
You're not even thinking about it. And then afterwards you're like, what?
Yes. But it is that physiological driver, and that's where it is for you now, what we found out through that process and why it took us to get to that stage where you could actually then start to lose weight was, yes, we had to correct that metabolism, but we mostly had to correct your blood sugar and insulin, right? Like that was that was the big fundamental kingpin for you as far as
1,000%. I wasn't going to lose any weight. Like my insulin was, and you know, I had gone to the doctor before I'd come to you. I've been put onto a fertility specialist for my PCOS to help me lose weight, which is interesting. You know, they told me they couldn't help me until I wanted to get pregnant. And you don't want to get, like, I didn't want to get pregnant until I was at a good weight. So you're kind of at like a stalemate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're saying, we'll help you when you want to have a kid. And you're saying, I want the help once I'm at the right weight.
Yeah.
And that's just.
One more, I want to, like, help me now. Get back, obviously your periods weren't regular, like help me get back ovulating I can when I actually want to. I don't need to come and see you.
Yeah.
Saying just come back and see me is like, well, that's not really.
They don't seem that worried about the irregular periods though, do they?
Yeah, and this is the really interesting thing that some doctors are really worried, like if you're not getting a period because they're worried about endometrial cancer risk. But I think this is the fundamental disconnect within the medical system, that they don't realize that women, we need to ovulate for more than just fertility, right? That's the thing that it's really missing. And this is why I really like Dr. Geraldine Pryor, who's a amazing endocrinologist in Canada, who's the pioneer of CEMCOR, the Centre of Ovulation and Menstrual Research, because they are doing all their research on what are the other reasons why women need to ovulate? Because this has never actually really been studied.
Yeah, you just tie it with having a child. But, you know, we've talked about, like, you know, even, like, your exercise, like planning your exercise around your cycle and stuff like that.
It's so helpful. Yeah. These hormones can be used as such a superpower. They tell us, like, they can show us, like, when, as you said, like, when you're going to more likely perform well in exercise. Yeah. But it's also really important for, like, bone health. So actually during your cycle, you break down bone and then rebuild bone. Like, so break down, and this is all tied into ovulation and your estrogen phase and your progesterone phase. It's also really important for, like, brain health. And we know this because we know the effect that the pill has on hormonal contraception for so many women on their mental health. Mm-hmm. Yes, it doesn't affect everybody, but finally it's been, like, accepted that, yes, for a lot of people it does affect their mental health, and especially those synthetic progestins can be really detrimental. And while it can be really helpful for a lot of other symptoms, I think that's the thing, is where we need to get into this part where we're a lot more honest about, okay, yes, the pill can be amazing. It can be great for your hirsutism. It can be really helpful for acne for some people, but it can have some cons, that it's not going to fix your ovulation. Yes, you'll get a regular bleed, but when you come off that pill, your periods are going to be as irregular, if not more irregular. And if you're trying to conceive at that point, that's going to be really difficult, right? Like, how about, I mean, that took me all of 30 seconds to explain. Yeah. How about we just explain that in a consult, right? And just say that there are pros and cons, as opposed to just this one-sided, I go on the pill and get a regular period. It's like, why? Like, what are the benefits of that versus what are the potential downsides? And I think that's where we need to go.
It's a bit scary, isn't it? Like, it's scary for, like, the general public that just actually doesn't even know what this pill's doing to their body, but they take it every day.
Yeah.
And me and my friends talk about this quite a bit now, because, like, a lot of my friends have starting to come off their contraception, and they're kind of going, like, oh, I've taken this thing, I've put this thing in my body for the past 10 years, and I don't even know what it's doing. I just know that I'm not going to get pregnant.
Yeah. And that, and sometimes it might not be that, it might be actually a great thing for them. And, but it's, I think it's that not being fully, having full sort of informed consent. I think that's really what it comes down to, is that if I knew, if I was able to really make a decision about that, yes, I would likely still make the same decision, but also I might make a different decision about when to come off it, or, and, you know, and more that not knowing how a cycle works or how actually someone gets pregnant. Like, I know you were just saying that a lot of your friends are experiencing this now, where they're going, ah, okay, so there's actually only, like, 3 days that I could get pregnant.
Yeah, it's funny because I, like, you know, a couple of my mates are trying to have kids, and I'm not at that place in my life, but I know a lot about it because of you, and I'm telling them all this information, and they're coming to me, and they're like, why don't you know this about our bodies? Like, you think about, you go to sex ed at school, and they teach you how to put a condom on, and you don't even know how your cycle works. You don't know how ovulation works. It's just, it's bizarre. It's really weird.
Yeah, and maybe it is the fact that we're not really in that, you know, we tend to absorb information when it's relevant to us, right? So everyone says, why don't we learn this at school? I don't know if we'd be in the place to learn that at school. But we need to know at the time where to then go and get information, right? I think that's the thing, is when you do decide and you're like, oh, gosh, how does this work? Where do we go?
I think it is relevant, though, because, like, you know, if you don't want to have a kid and you know what your cycle looks like and you know when you're ovulating, it's a lot easier not to get pregnant. And a lot of teenagers don't want to get pregnant. A lot of people starting out their career, do you know what I mean? I think that is important, because I've talked to my friends who don't want to get pregnant as well about, and they're coming off the pill and, you know, they're only going to use condoms. And I said, yeah, and if you track your cycle and you also know when you're ovulating, you're being extra careful at that time, then you're pretty good, you know. But like, so I do think that that information is relevant, even if you don't want to have a child.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And and I think probably what needs to happen is that the information needs to be there. It's just whether, like, some people, depending on where they are in their life, might not choose to engage with that. They might be like, oh my God, too hard. Just give me the pill, right? That's fine. But it's the, I think you're right that it's the assuming that someone doesn't want to know and isn't intelligent enough to put this into practice. I think that's, because that's often the argument why not to teach fertility awareness method contraception to teenagers is because, oh, they just won't do it right.
Yeah.
It's like, who says?
Yeah.
Like, there are a lot of really,
like, I'm friends, like, with all the girls I went to school with, my friends from school are my friends now, and I think, you know, the majority of them would be smart enough.
Absolutely.
To do that.
Yeah. So it's like, but this is the way that public health works, right? It's the same thing. I mean, I recorded a podcast with Lily Nichols, which we're releasing as well, on vitamin A during pregnancy. And a lot of the guidelines around the world, especially the National Health System in the UK and the US, specifically state, don't take any like vitamin A in your prenatals during pregnancy, because they are not, because that's like that any level of vitamin A is harmful, it's actually necessary, but because they're worried that if people are taking, like, if they're eating an entire liver a day, they're going to be getting too much if they add in. And so they're making public health recommendations for the lowest common denominator. They're saying, well, if one person out there is eating all of this, then if they then go and add vitamin A to their prenatal, it could cause birth defects because it's too much. But actually, the majority of people are, A, not eating any liver, not eating much like forms of vitamin A, and actually vitamin A is essential for baby growth, right? Yeah. So this is the problem with public health messaging, and why I think that if you are intelligent, this is why listening to podcasts like this and doing, you know, like, I really hate the term now, since COVID it's been like this dog, like, bad term, like, do your own research. But there are, well, you guys are smart, smart people. You can actually listen outside, and you should be empowered to do that. Mm-hmm. So yes, actually doing your own, like, understanding more and asking questions is really powerful, mm-hmm. and you should be informed and given the tools to be able to do your own research, like, and make your own mind up rather than just listening to the 10-second description that your doctor gave you about why you should be on the pill, which is it will give you a regular period, which is actually factually incorrect.
Yeah.
Well, so by saying it will regulate your cycle was factually incorrect, because it's not regulating your cycle would mean that you are ovulating, and that's the pill's not doing that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that you are totally correct that there are so many other ways that we could do this and totally correct that the treatment that you received was pretty suboptimal.
And no, it's quite hard to get, like, you if you think about it too much, you get quite bitter.
Yeah.
Like, I tried to not, but, you know, sometimes I have conversations with friends and family, and you do start to feel quite bitter about it. Like,
because you feel like you wasted, what, 9 years of your life?
Yeah.
Or, and like, not wasted, but went through a lot of pain.
Oh, yeah. I feel like I put, like, I lost a lot of time. You know, like I said, you know, for me, I was depressed. I was trying to figure this out. I felt like I'd lost a bit of my identity because of it. Like, I wasn't, like I said, I wasn't doing as well at my job. I wasn't doing well in sport, all those things. And I felt like I put my life on hold a little bit to figure this out, and there was no help, and I was asking for it.
Mm.
Like, I was going to my doctor, like, towards the end, especially the last year or two before I found you, I was going to my doctor, even though I was scared to, because I knew that I was going to leave feeling worse because they were just going to tell me to lose weight. And every time I went back, I'd put on more weight.
Mm.
So not only was I not losing the weight they were telling me to lose, but I was going back to them heavier.
Mm.
And so I went to them, and I was desperate, and I was pretty much begging for help. They sent me to a fertility expert. They, you know, said that they couldn't help me until I wanted to have a kid. I didn't want to have a kid until I had lost I was healthy. And then I said, okay, I need to find a PCOS specialist then. I don't need a fertility specialist. Can you put me through, like, who can I get in the DHB? Like, where's a specialist? What is it, like, 1 in 5 people have this? Mm. So where are the specialists for it in this country? And they didn't have anyone. And I just thought that was great. They couldn't recommend me a single person.
Mm-hmm. And even, I think that the stat is, like, even less than 1% of people with PCOS even get, like, a dietitian referral. And often that dietitian, wouldn't be quite specific enough. It would be quite similar, maybe a similar experience to what you had where they might give you a lower calorie diet, but it would be like oats for breakfast, which just wasn't working with your insulin. So it wouldn't necessarily be the outcome, but it still would be, you know, like a better than sending you a two for
fertility specialist. I got put into this like program. The process was kind of weird, but they like, well, we got you into this program to help you lose weight. And it was really kind of insulting for me because it was telling me really basic health, like information about food that I knew. Like I wasn't eating crap food. I wasn't eating processed, like, you know, my family, you know, we lots of, you know, like our dinner's like meat and three veg, you know, like we're eating like home kill meat and vegetables. And, you know, like we weren't eating like chicken nuggets for dinner. Do you know what I mean? And like, that's kind of what they were in this program. Like, I think I tuned into the first one and I was like, this is not where I'm at in my life. Like, I know what foods are healthy and what aren't for a normal healthy person, but it's not working for me.
Mm.
And obviously now it seems so simple because, you know, I've figured it out with you. And, I'm eating a lot of the same foods I ate before at different times of the day.
Yeah, and at different times of your, like, where you're at the moment, right? So to summarize, because I think a lot of people will be like, what did work? Like, what was it? And I think that for you, it was really like identifying that your insulin was like way too high. So that your blood sugar was way too high. It was causing you to have like sugar and carb cravings. It was what was causing the brain fog, and therefore, you know, why you were feeling like you weren't achieving at your job and weren't like as sharp as what you should have been or what you used to be. And this was then, you know, that was really like the crux of why you weren't responding to those things. Like you weren't responding to having porridge or oats for breakfast because that would just send your blood sugar on a roller coaster and then you'd be like rifling in mum's cupboard trying to find the like melting moments, like horrific plastic chocolate Pams as well, not like the good Nestle ones that actually taste okay, just the crack ones. But I was here for anything. That was where you were at. And but also too, because your like metabolism had been so affected.
Because when I came to you, I was eating very low calorie.
Really low calorie.
Yeah. And so it was funny because like for some people it would be like, okay, now I'm on a diet. But for me, I was like eating more food. I was adding food into my diet. So I was kind of like reverse dieting like from the start. Most people wouldn't do that till later. Like, I think it's the life is right. Mm-hmm. But I kind of did it from the get-go because when I came to you, I was eating so low calorie. I had to get my calories up and I wasn't prepared to put more weight on to do it.
Exactly. And this is why I think people listening to this will be like, okay, yes, like, okay, yes, I am the same as you. I'm not eating crap. I'm eating like a really healthy diet and I'm still not losing weight I still feel my like weight is spiraling. And this is what I think that most people with PCOS are struggling with, is that they're eating little. And therefore when they do a diet, when they just follow that health program that you were talking about where they say, don't eat chicken, you know, what they're trying to do is they're trying to reduce the calories there, but you're already eating way less than even the program they're giving you, so it's not going to work. And this is, I think, why when you were doing your program with your PT, like same thing happened. A, it was just setting your blood sugar off, but also B, you were already eating too little going into that. So they really had nowhere to go with your calories from that as well. And calories are not everything. Calories matter a bit, but they're only the like byproduct afterwards. For you, it was like very much getting that blood sugar thing sorted. Mm-hmm. Do you have any idea what you were eating calorie-wise when you came
out? Yeah, because I was counting my calories. And I got to the point where if I ate more than like 1,300 calories a day, I'd put weight on.
Yeah. Like, and that's because you were eating
I was eating around 1,000, 1,200. And if I ate more than that, I would never eat that lower calorie now. Like, look how much weight I've lost.
Yeah.
But I'd put weight on. I would put weight on eating the amount of calories I was eating to lose all this weight that I've lost.
Mm.
Like, that's just crazy.
And that's because, and I talk about this a little bit in the why people might struggle with feeling like they've gained weight over holiday periods and things like that, is because if you are eating really little, then it's all about like, if you eat about 20% more than what your body's used to eating, your body will likely gain weight.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're eating 1,000 calories, you only have to eat 1,200 and suddenly you'll gain weight, right? And 1,200 is a tiny amount. So all and 200 calories is also a tiny amount. It would be the equivalent of like a glass of wine and the tiniest handful of like crisps or chips. Oil. Yeah, exactly. A little bit of extra oil on your salad, right? So you are still eating super healthy. It's just that it's been a little bit more and suddenly your body's like, yoo-hoo, more calories. Yeah. Like I will store them. Yeah. Whereas now if you were eating like what you're eating now, which is like 2,200, for example, 20% of that is like 400 or 500 calories, right? Which is so much more. And so you can go away over Christmas and have more wine and have like more food. And it doesn't, you can easily maintain that weight.
Yeah, well, I've recently just gone back from living in London for 6 months. So I like, you know, I lost 20 kgs. Am I allowed to say, I don't like saying numbers because I know if it was me listening, I'd be like, sweet, she's lost 20. I can do, you know, like that. Yes, but anyway.
I think that's the beauty of hindsight is you can look back and go, I see that would, for someone listening to this, that actually would be what you want, but it's not, it's probably detrimental, right? So if you are listening to this, a few things we've talked about. One is like hearing how long it probably took before you started going into that weight loss phase. Again, it's necessary, but it is, we know it's hard to hear. Yeah. Second is we know you want the numbers, but also just take them with a grain of salt and don't get fixated on the like the number.
100%. So I lost that amount of weight and then I reverse dieted and went back to like a maintenance and
when we say reverse dieting, what we're doing there is getting your calories up. Like, so you are now like when you go through a weight loss phase, which is what we've done with Jamie, then once weight loss plateaus, which it always does, then we then start to increase what you're eating again really slowly so that your body can gradually increase its metabolism and then you can be back up to eating like, say, 200. Yeah, which is a really good amount of food.
Double what I was eating
before. Yeah. And that was easy for you to maintain, right?
Yeah, the weight loss was easy. And it sounds crazy to say that after, you know, 8-9 years before that of trying to lose weight. But it wasn't hard because I knew how to stick to a plan. I'd stuck to all these diets. You know, I wasn't sitting there cheating. I was sticking to them. They just weren't working for me.
Yeah. But you didn't think that, right?
Like, no, at the time, it was a failure.
Yeah, and you thought that you didn't have any self-control or...
Yeah, 1,000%. I think that's what I struggled with the most is when I signed up for this. I felt like, and I think because it's like, okay, you need to make this lifestyle change and you need to make it forever. How can I stick to a diet? And that's not the right term, but this is what I felt like at the time. How can I stick to a diet forever when I failed at dieting for the last 8 years? And it's terrifying, but it didn't take me that long starting the protocol before I realized that this was way easier. Like this is so much easier than anything I was doing before. I think about food, like it has no control over me now, which seems crazy because I'm sticking to this lifestyle change. And, you know, I'm talking to my friends, oh, what kind of foods are you eating? And they, you know, it seems so extreme, but it's information I know it's in the back of my mind. Once you know something, you know it, it's there and it's easy. Whereas before I was controlling my life. All I was thinking about was food. What can I eat? What shouldn't I eat? If I went out for dinner with friends, I never enjoyed my meal because I felt guilty. And now I enjoy food way more than I ever did. And I'm losing weight doing it.
Yeah. But was it quite a mental challenge when you were like, oh, this is actually relatively easy because you had been conditioned that weight loss should be hard and should be extreme?
Yeah. It was weird. Like, I was like, what? I mean, to be fair though, you know, like I spent like a year first, but I knew like, because my other symptoms were changing. I felt like, you know, I didn't have any willpower before and I started to realize, no, I do. Like, but it's hard, you know, I think you told me that at the start as well, like you do have willpower. It's just it's hard to believe that, like when you've just been so, you've told yourself something for so many years, you know, you've spoken to yourself in a certain way. So it's hard to adjust your thought process around that. But it didn't take me long during the protocol, you know, once I started to see these other changes, to realize, oh yeah, this thing was really controlling me, and like it wasn't my fault that I was failing.
Mm, it was my blood sugar that was controlling me. Yeah. That was what was causing me to.
And
not
I think
be
that was
to...
the first symptom I kind of.
Yeah, when it was that okay, I do have willpower when I go to the supermarket after work, but it was just that my blood sugar was so low that it was driving me to go and buy these ridiculous things because it was just literally, it's a physiological response. It's like, it's a survival mechanism. We can't have low blood sugar. It's like telling you to buy these things to bring your blood sugar back up. Yeah. And, but it's, as you said, it's hard in the moment to feel like that when you feel like a failure and you go to the like supermarket and you buy a packet of biscuits and you eat them all because you're like, well, I just have no self-control. Mm-hmm. But looking back now, did you, because I said to you, I was like, look at all these other areas in your life. You have self-control. Like, it's not that. Like, looking back now, can you see that? And
go, oh, yeah. Like, 1,000%. I just know that what my headspace was like then.
Mm.
And it's like, I don't know how else I could have got through to myself other than just, like, actually working through the process and then being able to compare.
Yeah. It's hard because I know that I'm going to, and you know that I'm going to ask you, what would you tell yourself? You know, 9 years ago or 8 years ago. But it's hard because, as you said before, like, you're not in the same position now as what you were. You almost have to just go blind faith, jump into it and trust the other symptoms that we can remedy more quickly, like sugar cravings and your carb cravings, because not everyone gets sugar cravings. Like, that's a lot of people tell me, they're like, oh, I hear on the podcast, like, Jamie talking about sugar cravings, but I never got those. So is this still relevant to me? Mm-hmm. That's one symptom that some people get. Like, other people, it might be the brain fog or, you know, and these are all symptoms of the same thing, of that underlying PCOS driver, which for you was blood sugar, for some, and insulin. Some people it's just stress, or some people it's inflammation. And so, like, it's once we remedy that driver, that kingpin, once we kind of knock that over, then all the other dominoes kind of start to knock over. And it's just that some of them are quicker. Like, for you, we probably could have pushed the weight loss earlier, right? Like, that's, it was never.
I think that it was more of a mental thing for me as well. Like, I needed to work through that and feel like I didn't want to jump in too early as well and feel like, okay, you want to fail again. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? I think I had to work through that with you to be in a place where I felt really confident.
Yeah. Because we left it up to you. We said, can't you tell us when you feel that you're ready? You feel that, and and you did. But so it's not, you know, we're not saying to people, oh, you can't do that for it. You know, you have to work through this for a year. It's all individual. Yeah. But
like, I definitely know if I went to you sooner and I wanted to, you would have helped me do it.
Yeah.
But if I wanted to really do it properly, you know, do it right.
Yeah. And it's paid off, right? Yeah. It's paid massive dividends. And I think that's a good thing, is if you have the, like, if you can be patient with that and instead focus on those other symptoms, like the, you know, or and what you're doing to, like, actually make those changes. Mm-hmm. That's why not having, like, a weight goal is really helpful, because otherwise if you're like, oh, I came in and I wanted to lose weight and it's been a year and I haven't, but actually I wasn't ready, then how do I actually judge success?
Yeah.
Whereas actually it's like, well, no, I've judged success because I've put all of these steps in place and I've also had all of these other symptoms, then that is, you know, that's what we can judge that on. And for you as well, is there, looking back now, like, were there other things that you didn't realize at the time were connected, other symptoms?
Yeah, well, I didn't even know the brain fog and stuff like that. I didn't know any of that was connected. I wasn't even aware I had brain fog. I just thought that was who I was now. You know, I didn't recognize that as a symptom. I just thought, like, I was depressed and lazy and had no willpower and was overweight. And if I lost the weight, I'd feel better about myself, so I wouldn't be as tired. And I never really saw those things as symptoms. I mean, I had, like, the irregular periods was obviously a obvious symptom. The excess hair was an obvious symptom.
And have they improved at all? We haven't talked about those yet.
Oh, yeah, my periods. They used to be like every 2 to 3 months, and now they're every 27 days now. Like,
how quickly do they correct? Because they can often be relatively quick for some people.
They started to get closer and closer together, but it was like a slow progression over, I think, like a year. So they just slowly got closer and closer together until they became, yeah, the 20s, 27 or 28 days.
Yeah. And basically what that's showing us is that your body was previously having to attempt to ovulate many times before it was successful, and then it's sort of like, okay, it's one less attempt, and then one less attempt, and one less attempt, and that's why they get closer together, which is brilliant. That's showing us, like,
such great improvement.
And what I was going to say before was when we were talking about the weight loss, so like I lost that big chunk of weight and then I, you know, reverse dieted for a bit and I went back to the maintenance and then I moved to London and then I wanted to do another cut. And I was living in London and I was traveling around Europe and I was like, oh, am I going to be able to do this? And yeah, I did. I did another, like, you know, I decided to lose a bit more weight and I went to Italy for like 2 weeks and ate croissants and, you know, like pasta, and I still managed to lose another, I don't want to put a number on it, but I know people are going to want to know. Like, it's hard because you can't see me. Mm-hmm. If you could see me, you'd be like, okay, she looks that much better, or, you know, she's that much smaller or whatever. But so I lost another 10 kgs while I was traveling around Europe, which just seems crazy. I was probably drinking a bit more than I should have, but I could get away with a lot more because I had that education. And I, you know, you've taught me little tricks and stuff to minimize, you know, like if I'm going to go out for brunch with my friends, I used to just go out for brunch, but now I'd have a protein shake or something and then have a smaller breakfast just to blunt that, you know, sugar response. You're going to still have, it's 80-20, you know, and me and my sister's got PCOS as well. She's been diagnosed more recently and she's worked with Claire as well. And we always talk about this. We went in, we're both very like, we're going to do this right. Do you know what I mean? And so we were 100 and you really were like, you need to like do that 20. And you have to, because you have to, like, it's forever. And so you have to enjoy your life. Not that like the food I'm eating on the protocol, like if I'm strictly sticking to the PCOS, like the foods that are PCOS friendly, they're still great food, but, you know, sometimes you want to have, you know, something else.
Or pasta,
yeah,
or
exactly.
An ice cream.
And you can do that and you should. Yeah. And I found that really hard to talk to people about, because, you know, I might go out for a meal with someone and they go, oh, I thought you can't have that, you know? Mm. And it's really hard to explain that to people, that, no, I can have whatever I want. Just in moderation. But yeah, that's like most people, right?
Yeah. I find the best way to navigate that is when they ask you, or, you know, you say, I'm not eating that, and people say, why? Just say, I don't feel like it. Because then you don't have to get into that discussion about what you do and don't eat in the room, like, because everyone is always going to have their own opinions and
their own history.
And I don't think people mean to be like rude or like, oh, but I thought like you this is what you're like, you're on this diet and this is what you can eat, and I'm pretty sure a chocolate croissant's not you know what I mean? And
And so that's why now when you're going into, you know, learning this and learning how to be 80-20 about it, you know yourself, okay, yes, I couldn't have that every single day. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I can definitely have like two or three meals a week that I can eat whatever I want, and it's not going to make a huge difference. Like, and actually, that's what means I can stick with it for a long time.
Also, now I think, because I, you know, when I was when I went to Italy, my mum came over and we traveled around Italy, and we had like free breakfast everywhere we stayed, and there was croissants every morning, and, you know, I could get away with it for a little bit. Towards the end, I started to get, you know, some of those old symptoms back, and I, you know, it was obviously like not great at the time, but I think it was also just a really good reminder of like why I want to be doing this. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, I cannot wait to get back into my routine, you know, like I wanted to go back because that's the new normal for me now. Yeah. And that's where I'm like, my body works best. And like, I wanted to get back there.
Yeah.
So that was like a really good reminder for me, like you're really on a good track and you don't ever want to feel like that again.
Yeah. And I think that this is really good to talk about, because a lot of people really struggle with the concept of 80-20. Like, you can have, like, yeah, you could have that chocolate croissant. Like, absolutely, go and have that. But then the next meal you might choose to make a different, like, you know, you might something choose to make a choice that's better for your blood sugar or your, like, whatever you're trying to resolve. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, I think, that have struggled with diet and stuff in the past struggle with that concept, because they go, well, what's going to then stop me from free falling into 80-20 is then sounds like a very slippery slope to doing nothing, right? And And I think that what you've just said is that no, it's not, because you realize that actually eating the 80%, the things that make you feel really good, actually make you feel really good. And so you quickly realize this. You kind of realize when you've sort of pushed it a bit too far.
Yeah.
And I'm a huge 100% advocate for all of us trying to
eat. I think
you
do have to test that limit as well. Like, it's important to recognize where that is.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it's good information to have.
Yeah. And so testing that and then going, nah, I've gone too far. I need to come back a little bit. And that's a really good thing. But we need to then, by having that concept of 80-20, then you don't come back to being really strict. So it's not like this back to going back to really kind of like binging and then restricting. It's kind of just like, okay, I slipped into more, you know, I was probably more 70-30 when I was traveling, or even 60-40, and I know that that didn't feel great. So I'm now back to more the 80-20 when I'm more in my routine. And it's that confidence. And I think that confidence comes over time.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say to you. That was what I was just thinking when you were saying that, is that it's funny because every time I'd lost weight in the past, it was in the back of my mind, like, you're not going to keep this off. And where I'm at now, I feel like so confident that I'm never going to put that weight back on. I just think I know too much information now. And I know how much better I feel. Like, I just can't see myself ever slipping back that far.
Well, because it wasn't, you now don't, you know, you don't need to be going to that, those kind of extreme measures, right? And so then you're not going to ping back that.
I just think I know too much information to even ping back. Like, if I was going to go back, I'd actively have to make that decision and, you know, like, and ignore all the information I've learned.
Yeah. And also too, you'd have to go back to eating very little, like, because at the moment, because you're eating, you can get away with eating so much because we've, you know, got your metabolism so much higher. It would take you to eat a lot of food now in order to gain weight, whereas previously it was so easy because you were eating so little. So all of those factors mean that it's like so much easier to maintain weight. And that is really what makes the difference.
One other thing I was going to say to you as well, as we were talking about the 80-20 thing and, like, you know, like verging on that line of like maybe going a bit too far. Me and my friend, one of my best friends has PCOS as well. I've got a lot of, like, my friends, you know, a lot of people that have it. And we were talking about the other night, we're talking about chocolate croissants. I don't know why that's on my mind. But we were saying, like, you know, we've talked with you about forming habits and, you know, like you're also replacing habits that you've developed, you know, bad habits, doing these different diets or whatever, coping mechanisms, you know, to deal with the blood, like the sugar cravings and stuff like that. And we were saying, you know, when you're doing that 20, I'm very careful to not make that a habit. Like, I find it could be very easy to, like, make that a routine of, like, I'm going to have that treat this day. Like, I try to keep that kind of erratic because I know that I will form a habit pretty quickly, and then I'll be having something every Friday. I'll be having, do you know what I mean? Like,
And also it goes back to those sort of dieting rules as well, right? Like, that it gets into the, oh, well, you know, like Friday is my cheat meal or something like that, right? And we want to really get away from those dieting rules, and that it, you can, you know, you can be much more flexible. I think this is – yeah. Well, I think that a lot of weird diets set us up for failure is that they are very rule-bound, and that works in the short term because we all want the solution. We all want – to be told, and we've talked about this multiple times during this, that people will be listening to this and being like, just give me the answer.
I listened to so many of your podcasts before I worked with you, and I had a pen and paper sitting there, and I was just like, I was getting annoyed. I was like, tell me what to eat. What am I having for breakfast? What am I having for lunch? And now it's like, that's insane. You can't sit here and talk to how many people listen to this podcast and tell them all what to eat, and it's going to be the same for all of them.
Yeah.
But at the time I was like getting frustrated. But I think you have to work that out for yourself. Like, you obviously give us a guideline, but we really have to, like, I did that continuous glucose monitor, and, you know, tested out, you know, you gave us the carbs that, like, you think are more tolerable for someone with the insulin resistance. And then I tested those, and I actually could tolerate all of them except for if I hadn't had a great sleep. You know, I just couldn't cope with those carbs, any carbs.
Yeah.
If I was running on little sleep.
Yeah. It's amazing, hey?
Isn't yeah, it shows you, and it's just amazing information to have.
Yeah, exactly. And it shows you why you might make those choices when you've had a poor night's sleep and going, okay, so I'm not going to now sacrifice sleep to get up and go for a 10K run because that's just going to be counterproductive for what I want to do. So, again, you've got that education now that you can make that choice easily yourself. You don't need me to sit here and write you a plan for the week, being like, okay, so tell me how many hours you got sleep last night. Okay, well, you know, don't run today. Do your workout tomorrow or something like that. Yeah. It's you've got that information. You can make that choice. It's the same with food. It's like I'm not. You don't. You can. You've got the tools to adapt your favorite recipes. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got the like measurements and the builders and things like there. Where was that you can make that up? Mm-hmm. And I think that's as well. Where what I was saying before about how diets set us up to failure because they are so rule bound that they, because this is what we like, right? Human brain loves those kind of rules. I can't have this, I can have that because it's very black and white. But that works well in the short term. It's really bad in the long term. Like basically once you get past about 8 weeks, your brain is like rebelling against the rules. Like, we just can't like live. You can't go to Italy and go, gosh, there's nothing to eat here because the diet says this is the rule and I can't find that at the breakfast buffet. Therefore I have to I'm just going to eat anything. So that's where what we think we want in terms of like you were saying that what I thought I wanted was you to tell me on the podcast what to eat. Mm-hmm. That's what you think you want. But actually what you need is it to be personalized to you and what you've got going on. And that's why everything that we do is about finding out what your PCOS drivers are and then matching you with the right plan and matching you with the just enough of the lifestyle changes that you need to make a big difference, mm-hmm. not everything, not overwhelming you, because I know that's what we've talked about before as well. You and Steph have talked about this as well, is like you come in wanting to do up 100% and be like, well, what about this and what about this? And I'm going, I don't think that's going to make a really big difference.
Yeah, yeah, you really have to pick your battles for sure. I was just going to say as well, like you could have made your job a lot easier, like with me or with other girls in similar situations and just said, don't have carbs. Do you know what I mean? You could have just said that there's other, like I did another online program before I came to you and yeah, just cut the carbs. I'm just like more like a keto-based one. It'd be very easy to cut out carbs and, yeah, it would probably work for my insulin, but it wouldn't work for me long-term because that's not sustainable to never have carbs. Or maybe it is, but it's hard. And, like, I think that's like probably the best thing about the protocol is that you're trying to help us get away with as much as we possibly can because it makes life easier, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And it makes it more sustainable. So, yes, you're right, like, you could make nutrition guidelines like really black and white, but it wouldn't work for most people for long term, right? And that's the thing, is like I would just be setting you back up into that like failure pattern of I get that initial dopamine hit because it is working, but even like for people with insulin, going like carb free doesn't, for a lot of people, doesn't work. Like, and this is people that have been like, oh, well, it can't be my insulin because I've done keto and it didn't work. And it's like, but that's why, if your stress hormones are a bit high, that could be a reason. So we really need to find those like big kingpins and find the things that are really going to make a difference for you.
Especially to start with. And then later, if you want to like keep progressing and chipping away, that you can start to address some of those like smaller things if you want to.
Yeah.
Like I'm not like, I know I don't have everything like under control, but like, you know, for me, I think the thing I found the hardest is the adrenal factor for me, because it's not tangible. You can't grab it. Like I can see my weight. I can see my food. I cook my dinner, I prepare it, I touch it. But it's like, you know, like your stress, I find that a lot more difficult. And I've obviously like, we've come up with a plan and like, you know, there's things that I do to minimize it, but you know, I'm still not 100% there, but I just, and like, you know, I'm going to keep working on that, but I just think, oh, if I don't get it, like if it doesn't get any better than this, then like, you know, that's fine because I'm healthy and I'm happy now.
Yeah. And I feel the same thing about a lot of other stuff, like environmental toxins, you know, like, and I think that's great. And I think it's a good idea to, as you're doing things, like as you're buying new Tupperware, that you buy glass instead of plastic. And I think that, again, as you're buying skincare and makeup, again, if you can buy fewer of the more toxic kind of products, amazing. But it's certainly not the first thing I'm going to get people to do. And especially not when it's like can be quite overwhelming. And that's why I think, as you said, we really need to pick our battles. And then later down the track, we might start doing that. So once you're feeling in a better position, because also too, like the level of brain fog, I remember you saying this to me, you said, the level of brain fog that I actually had, I really struggled to kind of grasp some of the concepts.
Yeah, I struggled. Like, I think I watched the video, like the insulin one, like honestly like 10 maybe times because I couldn't wrap my head around it. And now I'm like, what? Like, yeah. It's so simple. Like, it's not a hard concept really.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time, I just couldn't process that kind of information.
Yeah, and so if you're being bombarded and you've got that level of brain fog, again, you might not know that you have, you just think yeah. it's you, but you're being bombarded with so many different things that you need to change. You're going to tune into off. Sometimes it's the easiest things, and sometimes things like buying something can be really easy. Like, okay, I need to latch onto something here, so I'm going to go and buy myself some new face moisturizer. But it's not the most important thing, right? Whereas we actually need to tackle the really big things to get the big result, and then like the other stuff is peripheral, and it's like that incremental improvement over time. So that's, I think that's really important to focus on, is just not doing everything, really focusing on the four or five things that are going to have the biggest difference, and then the other stuff you can pick up later.
Yeah, and I'm a pretty lazy, like, I'm not a lazy person, but I just like things to be easy, and like I think I'm like pretty proactive about being lazy, like which sounds kind of weird to say, but like I'll meal prep on a Sunday so I don't have to do anything during the week. And it seems like, oh, that's so much effort. But that's because I don't have to do anything during the week. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, you know, I'm pretty proactive about that now. Like, I have these habits and tricks to keep me, like, on track, because I know, like, you know, there'll be some days during the week where you just can't be bothered cooking dinner. And so I have a plan in place for that. Like, I always have a few frozen meals. Like, and also I always have, like, chicken in the fridge so I can make like a wrap or a quick salad or yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Like cooked chicken. Frozen prawns are really good for that as well.
Like I always have at least one easy meal available to me if I'm feeling like I just can't be bothered.
Yeah. And although you're saying it's like, I'm lazy, it's not. You're actually very proactive. And but it's just I'm trying to be efficient with. I know that what's going to make it easy for me. Yeah, but also too, like you and Steph are definitely like perfectionists. Like I know that you laugh now and like, but it must be quite funny for you now. Have you seen any change where you're now like getting, like it's more a focus on how much can we get away with?
Yeah, 1,000%. We're always like, oh yeah, we're 20ing today. Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny because before it was like, oh, you're going to like, because like we went through that, well, I was a little bit ahead. I worked with you first and then she came in, but you know, so to start with, I was like, oh yeah, you're like really being a bit loose, but now it's like, yeah, who can get away with more before? Yeah, it's quite funny. Yeah,
and it's such a difference though, like such a different mindset from going from those when you first came in, it was the, oh, I don't think this is hard enough. I don't think this is extreme enough. Like I've done these way more extreme things in the past and they haven't worked. So why? This is not that extreme. Yeah. So why is it going to work?
Well, not only was it not extreme, it was easier than what I was doing.
Yeah.
Like it was probably the most food I was eating like in a long time.
And that can be mentally as hard as doing because we've been conditioned that we have to be, I think it's from that sort of boot camp military mentality of if you're not like crying from how painful it is, then it's not working at all, right? And I think we take that across to dietary stuff as well, whereas if it's not like super restrictive, then how could it possibly be helping? But it's not the way our body works. Our body actually works way better with small tweaks and addressing the actual problem rather than just like kind of trying to bulldoze it with intensity, whatever you're trying to do.
It didn't seem extreme, like going into the protocol. I think like you're like, no, you don't have to change, because I was like, oh, what do I eat for lunch? No, you don't have to worry about that for now. We're just gonna like focus on this. And at the time you're like, oh, like you come in kind of guns blazing, you're ready, you're desperate, you're ready to go, you know. And then you're like, oh no, like we're just gonna, and like at the time you're like, oh, but like looking back now, I'm like, I don't think it would have worked any other way.
Yeah.
Because you have to like slowly form one habit or replace one.
Yeah.
And then you've got that one down, that's a habit now, and then you do another one. And now it's like you know, I went up, like, you know, I was living in London, I'd go away for a weekend with the girls, or, you know, go on these trips, and I'd come back, and you're always reverting back to your baseline. And my baseline now was, you know, eating PCOS friendly food, keeping active, because I've slowly developed those habits over time.
Yeah.
And if you don't take the time to do that, it's easy to bounce back to what your actual baseline was. You know, you kind of need to change that.
Yeah. And that's probably the one thing now where I think when I ask you this question now, like, what would you tell yourself coming into that then differently around, oh, I'm really struggling with making a slow change because I just don't think it's going to work?
Yeah.
What would you tell yourself now about that?
But it's really important, and it's, you can't, I don't think any other way would work. You just, you have to do it. Yeah, for sure.
And it's probably that more the reassurance, because I think that it, generally we want things to be easy, as you said. Like, we generally want things to be easy. We don't want them to be hard, but we've been conditioned that unless they're feeling really hard, then they can't, they're not working. And I think that's the hard, that's the other thing too. It's like, don't worry, it can still work when you take it slow, because I think that's what we've also been led to believe, like, oh, well, it's
just going to take forever.
Yeah. To be fair, a lot of other girls in the protocol, like, that I went through with, they were seeing results way before I was, but they, you know, they had different issues. Like, some, you know, a lot of them dropped the weight during the protocol, just making those changes.
Depends on where you've come from, right? Like, if you've, it's kind of like me now, like, postpartum, like, I haven't actually had to do anything postpartum. Like, I haven't intentionally, but, like, gone about any kind of weight loss or anything like that. My body has naturally kind of done that because of, probably because of the, like, sort of the amount that I was eating was much, much higher. Whereas if you went into that and if you were eating a lot less, then you would have to just work so much harder for that to work. So it comes in, and it was just because of where you were at that you were eating so little coming into that, that we needed that time. And as you said, you more needed it, like, psychologically to give yourself
as much
time.
As anything else. And the other thing about coming into the protocol was, like, the amount of information I didn't expect. I thought it was just going to be like, here you go, here's a piece of paper, this is what you should eat, like what I'd done in the past. And you're kind of like, or especially for me, because I had so much brain fog and I was really struggling to process that information, you're kind of like, oh, do I need to know this? And, like, yes, you do. Like, I think that's probably the most helpful thing, especially, like, for the rest of my life, is, like, once you know, you just need to know that information, because you're not going to be around forever for me to, like, okay, now, Claire, what, do you know what I mean? You just have to not, you don't need to know every tiny little detail about it, but you need to know enough to make your way in life, you know, without having to, like, ask someone else every time. Do you know what I mean? Like, and it's kind of like that saying where it's like, you give a man a fish and he feeds his family for a day, but you give him a fishing rod. You know, like, it's definitely that, where it's like, once you know that information, like, I, you know, I don't need you anymore. I mean, little things might crop up, like, you know, I, like, this year I've had some, like, personal issues, and, like, so, like, my mental health is taking a step back, and, you know, that's affected my adrenals. And so, yeah, I've come to you and talked to you about that. But, like, like, in general, I think, like, I just know enough now that
yeah,
and succeed.
You are. You don't need me. And that's the brilliant thing. That's success, is when you can go away. Like, if I, like, failure would be having to set you up with a meal plan every single week, right? Yeah. And I think that's, again, going back to that, what a lot of people were like, okay, you know, can you give me a meal plan? It's like, yeah, I could totally give me a meal plan. Would it be right for you? Probably not. Would you be able to stick to it for, like, a couple of weeks? Yes, you probably would. After that, would you get annoyed with it? Yes, you absolutely would as well. So it's the, sometimes what we think we need is quite different to what we, and the only way I know this is because I've been there, and I have been there working with you guys for so long, like, with myself and everyone with PCOS. And we're actually doing a podcast. It'll be released, it'll be released before this or after, I think after this, it'll be in a few weeks' time, but where Emma and Charlie and I delve into where we really got it wrong. So things that we've done in the past, that's as so like nutritionists, that now we look back and go, I really got that wrong.
Yeah.
And that would be one thing that I think that a lot of people would look back and go, that was wrong, the way that, you know, like, giving people, like, PTs, giving people a meal plan, it's like, that's not the right way we should go about it.
Yeah.
What happens once you've finished that plan for the rest of your life?
Life, exactly. Yeah, you don't know how. And it's that we really need to, like, learn how to feed ourselves. Like, we are the...
Because I'm not walking around the supermarket with the list you've given me of what foods I want to eat. Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah. And you know the rationale why. Yes. So it's not even like... Because even if you did have that list, it would be have to be updated when these new products come out. And it's like, okay, so well, I know why I have those symptoms, and I know now what I need to do to fix that. And I can now pick the right foods and the right exercise and the right supplements and the right sleep and everything else I need to do. And I know those are kind of my core things, and I can just automatically do those as opposed to...
I'm not thinking, they're just a second nature now. I'm not thinking every day, okay, what can I eat? You know, like I just, it's kind of like, you know, you've got to eat anyway.
Yeah.
And so you've got to decide what to eat. And now I know, you know, it's just second nature. I gravitate towards the foods that I know are good for me now. And I'm not like, oh no, what will work for my PCOS today? You know?
Yeah. And so I think you're right. It's the like... learning the why, although it might take an extra 5 minutes a day, is so valuable long term. Like why you're doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, this is the problem. This is why I'm having these symptoms, and this is why doing this thing will correct that. Yeah. Rather than just going, oh no, I'm taking this supplement, but I've got no idea why.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, that's the like.
Yeah. And I think like when I listen to these podcasts, and there's probably people listening to this one, and they're thinking like, oh, like how will I succeed at this forever? And I just think you just have enough information that you just can't not. Like if you know, you know. Like there's just, I just feel like you can't fail if you just have that information. And like it might just seem like, you know, I know what I was like. I was in a rush. I just wanted to get the weight off. That was the first thing I wanted to address.
Yeah.
But like now it's like, it seems like the easiest thing in the world to control my weight. It's probably how other people feel, like that just their bodies just work normally, you know, like it just seems so simple to them. And I could never grasp that concept. And now I'm one of those people because I'm controlling my hormones.
Mm.
Yeah.
They're not controlling your weight anymore, right?
Yeah. So if I, you know, before it was like, you know, if the calories were a bit skewed, like it didn't make sense to me that I was eating so little and I wasn't losing weight. But now, because I have those those hormones under control, if I eat too much, I'll put on weight, and if I eat less, I'll lose weight, and that's kind of the end of the story because I'm controlling everything else. So, yeah, I just can't see how I would slip back, because I know there would be people worried that even if they did lose the weight, well, like how would they keep it off?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And that's the really hard thing, as you said. It's so hard when you're in that state that you would have been – so hard looking back at yourself, you know, when you were 19, 20, 25, like how would I get through to myself now that it is possible? And unfortunately, sometimes there is no way, because you have to kind of come to that conclusion. You have to come, you probably wouldn't have been ready at 25, right? You would have still, you kind of almost needed to go through that.
Yeah. I think I needed to kind of hit rock bottom, like in a weird sense. I had to get that desperate that I, you know, that I would like stick this out.
Yeah.
Cause it's a slow process. And I think if I was at 25, I would be like, no, I'm going to do it this way. Cause I want to go to R&B for New Year's and I want to be smaller. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to like do this other thing for a year. Like I want to be like lose weight now.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the hard thing. Sometimes it takes that. And that's why people, you know, are at different stages of their readiness to kind of like make that change. But unfortunately, like, you know, if I had this information when I was 19, or I wouldn't have had to have gone through that pinging back of the like the weight. So hindsight is a wonderful thing, but luckily we're both here now, and we can see that there is a different way and it is very possible. But
one of my friends, she was thinking about signing up for the protocol, and she said to me, like, Jamie, you know, she's like, I just don't know if I've got the willpower to do this. And I was like, I know you think you don't, but if you follow the steps, like, willpower is not your problem. Your problem's like your hormones, you know. Once you get those under control, you're going to be like, oh my God, yes, because I've got the willpower. It had nothing to do with that. You know what I mean? But it's hard because if someone had said that to me when I was at that stage, that would have been hard for me to wrap my head around that. But now it just seems so obvious and so simple.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you just got to give it a go. And like, it's like, that was kind of the way I thought about it. It was like, I've got to do something, you know, the next 12 weeks are going to pass anyway. So like, why not just like work through this? And, you know, if it doesn't work, it's just one more of those things. Yeah. And if it does, then.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And at the very least, I would have learned a huge amount about what's sort of driving that and got the knowledge about how to start to make those changes, which I think is a really brilliant thing in itself, that even if you're starting, even if you're not quite in the right space to make some of those changes, because sometimes you're not, like sometimes things happen and like life happens, but you've already got the knowledge. So you can implement that in 3 weeks' time when that, you know, like, you've had a sick family member or you've got COVID yourself, or as then you then realize that, I think it was Lily who said on her podcast, she was like, I realize now that there is no such thing as being on the wagon or off the wagon. It's just, we're all on the road. And that's what happens when you're on the road. There's a pothole, there's a detour, there's traffic lights. There's like, this all
and
just
it's so
happens.
Easy to think like that when you've been like doing all these diets. You're on a diet and you're off one. And there's no in between. So it's really hard to wrap your head around, okay, this is like a, and it's hard to word to other people, like, this is a lifestyle change.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the problem is that, like, a lot of that stuff with lifestyle change has got such a bad rap because it's then seen to be ineffective or, you know, it's just like,
I think people like,
really need to know anyway.
Yeah, exactly. As I said before, the easiest thing to say is, when people ask you what you're, you know, like, why you're eating or something, not eating, the easiest thing to just say is, oh, I just don't feel like it today.
Yeah.
And then you get out of that conversation.
And it's like, also the other thing is it's easy for me to talk about it now, but it was hard for me then. Like, especially, you know, that year that I hadn't lost the weight, but I was working with you. Like, that was hard because people knew, like, I was working with a specialist and they weren't, like, I wasn't, that they didn't see results. I saw results, but other people didn't. And I, like, was going to a gym. It was kind of a weird setup where you like had to have a PT.
That's right.
Talk to you about it. And so I got this lady and, oh my God, I was like, I want to like put on some muscle, right? Like to help with my insulin. And no, you just need to lose weight. And I was like, no, I don't. I just want to put muscle on. Like, can you just help me? Like I had to have a program to go to the gym and work with this PT. And no, you should do keto. And it's really hard to, it's really hard to say, no, this is what's right for me when you're standing there and you're overweight and this PT is, you know, like she's ripped and like, and you're saying, no, like it's really hard to like defend yourself. You kind of feel stupid.
Same thing I did. Yeah. Exactly the same thing as talking to the doctor, right? When they're saying, and you know, they say, it might say to you, well, you just need to lose weight. And you're like, don't worry, I'm working on that. And they're like, oh, well, it's obviously not working because you're the same weight as what when I saw you 3 months ago. And it's like, no, it's working. And they're like, oh, well, I think you should really, and then rattle off whatever they're into, whether it's like intermittent fasting or, you know.
And you get opinions from not just professionals. People will be, oh, if you tried this, I don't get. And it's, I had to really learn how to advocate for myself, even though I was embarrassed to do that because, like, it seems silly now and, it's sad, but I just was really, I found that really hard standing there, like, quite overweight, being like, no, this is working for me, you know?
Mm.
And now, but I think you just have to stick it out. And I thought that at the time, like, they'll see in time that it works. And now they do because it has worked. Like, you know, like I look a lot different. To what I looked like then, it just took time to prove to people.
Yeah, but mostly it's not generally just, you know, just about what things look like, but you've seen the other thing, you know, your periods are now completely regular.
Yeah, I'm not just talking about my weight. I'm talking about
all the things that they don't see.
Yeah, like even my, like, just the way I talk to people, like I'm clearly happier, you know. And I was before I lost the weight because I wasn't, like my brain worked properly for starters, like.
Which is such a huge thing.
Yeah.
Like, we laugh about it, but man, it is like it has an impact on everything in your life.
Yeah.
That brain fog. And as you said, your confidence.
I think that was probably the hardest symptom for me, which is funny now because I didn't even realize it was one at the time.
Yeah. Exactly, because it does affect you. I remember for me as well with work, it affected my confidence. I'd already always prided myself on my memory and my like sharpness, and suddenly I was like getting to work and like literally staring at the computer for an hour before I could like form a sentence to reply to that email. Like I'd see the emails, I'd read them, but I just couldn't actually figure out. I knew how to reply to them, but I just didn't know like what to say. I just felt like I'd get up and go get some water and get another coffee and like, but nothing really worked.
And I started to be like, God, like, is there something else going on here? Because like even my partner at the time was like, you're being like quite dumb. No, not dumb. Like, I don't know if that's the right word, but it's probably the word he used. Like the things I was saying, like just holding conversations, like I was just so slow and like, I found it just so hard to process things, and like my friends and family noticed that.
Yeah. And so, that's the thing, is it's hard not to start thinking, well, gosh, is there something else?
Yeah.
Early onset Alzheimer's.
Yeah, exactly. Like, do I have a brain tumor? Like, there's all these things that you're like, oh my God. Like,
yeah. And this is really common. I mean, a lot of people listening to this saying, yes, that's me. Mm-hmm. Blood sugar and stress hormones are like the number one things that cause that, and hormonal dysregulation. Like I know that a lot of people going through perimenopause would struggle with this as well. So estrogen and progesterone play a role on that. But so it can be a bit of a storm there, but so easily fixed.
Yeah.
So
I think it was fixed. One of the quicker, like it might've been the first symptom I resolved with you.
Yeah. And it can generally be within a couple of weeks,
yeah,
like that quickly. Yeah. But it is, yeah, if you're feeling like that, think blood sugar, think stress hormones, maybe estrogen, progesterone, like, but most commonly the first two for most people with PCOS, unless you're in that perimenopause stage. Yeah. But yeah, that's like, it's life-changing, and it's so unnecessary that so many of us feel like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. It's like terrifying. Like that's why I think I could never slip back. Just that feeling like of, just like not feeling like yourself.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for sharing all of that, Jamie. It's so good.
Just had a year off.
Yeah. No, it's great. I love these podcasts where it doesn't even feel like we're doing a podcast. Yeah. It's just a chat.
Yeah.
And I think that so much of what you've said will resonate so well with
people. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Jamie is me.
Well, I felt like that listening to a few of these podcasts. I was like, oh my God, that is me.
Yes.
But yeah, it definitely gets easier. I think you just have to follow the steps and like, oh, it's so, yeah, it's easy to say now because I've been through it. But, you know, I think I would want to have heard that before, like at the start of my journey, that like, it's going to be like, it's not as hard as you think it's going to be. Like you just have to follow the steps and chip away at it. And then like step back and look at the whole picture, and it's going to be a journey, but it's not as hard as you think for sure.
Yeah,
I think especially for me, the brain fog, like once that was fixed, everything else just seemed so easy.
Yeah.
And
that's the, like, if someone else is taking that weight off your shoulders and just telling you like what those steps are, then it makes it a bit easier as well, because we can see what the problem is a bit clearer than yourself. Like when you're in it yourself, you can't see, and you don't often have the knowledge to be able to do that. So someone being able to go, this is what the problem is, this is what the solutions are, and then here's how we, you know, here's how we really recommend that you like attack those, not all at once, but in this order, because in this order they're going to actually have the biggest difference. And I think that order is important, because like if we'd said something to you like stop eating sugar, you never would have been able to achieve it, because you're still having that blood sugar roller coaster, right? And not that we say to you to stop having sugar, as you know, because we say go for gold having a chocolate croissant when you need to. But this is why other people may have struggled in the past, is because it's just like not the right. They're trying to achieve the outcome same outcome as us, but it's just in the wrong way that someone that's in that state that you were in can actually achieve it.
Mm-hmm. So,
So thank you, Jamie.
Thanks for having me, and thanks for helping me. More importantly, oh my God.
My pleasure. So great.
Now stand by for our disclaimer. The information contained in this podcast has been prepared for the purpose of providing information, including about the PCOS Nutritionist products and services, and is designed to support clients' overall wellness. It is not intended to provide medical advice or designed to rectify, treat, or cure any specific medical conditions or diseases. Nothing stated or shared in our podcast is intended to be and must not be taken to be medical advice. Please seek the advice of professionals as appropriate regarding the evaluation of any specific information, opinion, advice, or content contained in our podcast.